Good afternoon. Ready to proceed?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Elizabeth McFarland on behalf of the state. This case today is about whether, under the totality of the circumstances, the police stop and pat down of Stephen Henderson was reasonable. And the facts that lead up to this issue are that on a Sunday in January 2004, there was a DEA task force had a tip that Michael Jones, who was wanted on a federal warrant for drug trafficking, would be at a Boys and Girls Club off of Route 40 in Newcastle, near Newcastle. Excuse me. There was a briefing where they had police officers who were assisting the task force to apprehend the fugitive. They went to the Boys and Girls Club parking lot, staked it out, five or six police cars, and waited. The officer in charge, Detective Pope, radioed to his fellow officers that Mr. Jones was exiting the club in the company of three or four other men. At that point, the men were observed, and they all went toward one vehicle. Pope radioed out again, converge on the white SUV. Detective Schiavi's role, he was ordered to block the car with his car and stop the driver of the vehicle. He did just that. He pulled his unmarked police car in front of the SUV, holding his badge out the window and identifying himself as police. The driver turned out to be Mr. Henderson, who is the person at issue in this case. He told Henderson to put his hands on the car. He complied with those orders. Detective Schiavi got out, put one hand on Mr. Henderson's shoulder, put his other hand on the hip of Mr. Henderson, at which point he looked down and saw the butt of a gun. He took the gun, arrested Mr. Henderson, and Mr. Henderson then complained that he should not have been stopped. The state contends that the court below and Superior Court considered this only in terms of the quote-unquote automatic companion rule, whereas it should have been considered in terms of, and under that rule, found that the Delaware Constitution would not support that, although the federal Constitution might, according to the Superior Court. However, the state believes that really the totality of the circumstances analysis is the correct way to view this, and the court didn't consider the factors properly in that analysis, finding that it didn't need to do that analysis. In this case,
Well, what circumstance was not considered?
Well, the opinion reads that the only thing that would justify stopping Henderson was that he was a companion of a felon. The state doesn't agree with that. First of all, yes, he was a companion of a felon, and that's a very important factor to be considered. The person, Jones, of whom he was a companion, a neutral magistrate had found probable cause to arrest him, and not just for any felony, for drug trafficking, which is known to be violent. Drug traffickers are known to carry weapons. They're known to be with people who carry weapons. The police officer in this case was experienced with drug cases. He was experienced with arresting people involved in drug cases, and he was well aware that people who are drug traffickers often carry guns and are with people who carry guns. There was also, Mr. Henderson was the driver of the vehicle into which they were all getting, hence he would be someone who could actually take the wanted person away, assist him in fleeing an arrest. There was also the issue of this was happening in a public area where there are innocent bystanders and presumably children, being a Boys and Girls Club. Also, the police officer was unsure which of the three men entering the SUV was the wanted felon. He felt that he shouldn't wait to have someone pull a gun on him while he was waiting to figure out which guy was was which. It was safer to stop all three, find out who was who, and make sure that they had the right person and that there were no weapons involved for the safety.
I might have misunderstood what you said earlier. I thought you said the police met as a group before they decided to effectuate this arrest.
Yes.
And they knew Jones was inside, so I would have assumed when they were all together, somebody would have had a picture of Jones and said, well, we're going to arrest Jones.
The record is, the officer testified that he did not remember whether he was shown a picture or not, but he agreed that he had been given a description. But he did testify that he himself was not aware which of the three was Jones, that he was ordered to stop the driver, and that was what he was told, the driver, not which one was which. And also, if you weigh the minimal intrusion of the stop against the officer's safety, then the state believes under the totality of the circumstances that the stop was valid.
And did you argue all of this in the Superior Court?
Yes. In terms of the analysis as to whether under state law this is not, whether this would be a proper exception to a warrant requirement, and whether or not the Delaware Constitution is more protective. In cases of Fourth Amendment cases, this court has found two variations with federal law in the good faith exception and the definition of seizure. Other than that, cases looking at the totality of the circumstances have generally followed the federal analysis, and the state sees no reason why that should be altered.
And what's the leading federal case that would support the search?
Terry. I believe this was a valid Terry stop.
Nothing since Terry.
Well, I mean, if you look at this, not precise, not exactly under these circumstances, I believe there are other cases that support this. You have...
So in Terry, you have to be able to articulate that you have a reasonable suspicion that the person is engaged in criminal activity. And as I understand your recitation of the facts, they had an arrest warrant for someone who was known to be involved with drugs. Therefore, there's a reasonable, articulable suspicion to stop and frisk anyone that's walking with them.
In a situation where you know someone is violent, is engaged in violent activities, then it would be reasonable, given the minimal intrusion, to stop the people directly with them. And you have...
Tell me how this is different than the Ninth Circuit's automatic companion rule, as you just articulated.
The automatic companion rule, as articulated in Berryhill, would be that no matter what crime or what warrant was out there, that based solely on the fact that there was a warrant and nothing else, that you could stop and search the companion.
And the difference here is because the person for whom the police have the warrant is a drug dealer in their estimation and may be armed, and they don't know which one is, at least they say they don't know which one is which, then they have a reasonable articulable suspicion that all may be armed.
Yes, that for officer safety reasons, similar to the idea in...
In my mind, at least, there's a distinction between being able to articulate a reasonable suspicion that someone possesses a firearm and the rationale for therefore seizing and searching, which is for the officer's safety. The latter just doesn't automatically justify the search. Here, the reasonable articulable suspicion stems from the fact that the unknown person that they sought was a drug dealer. And the general consensus in our case is that that guns are associated with drug dealers, maybe not necessarily people who possess drugs,
right,
but drug dealers.
Yes. Also, there are other cases that are relevant that would bear on this. For example, the series of cases concerning car stops. This would be a similar situation in that the courts have found that there are situations where it's important, given a minimal intrusion, to allow officers to investigate or pursue someone based on the situation, so that if these three men had gotten in the car, there's no question they could all three have been stopped. It seems that it makes no sense for them to wait and let them get in the car and make a arrest situation more difficult when they could stop them in the parking lot and avoid...
How far can you back that up? Can you back that up all the way, time-wise, into, imagine rewinding a videotape, you're walking backwards back into the Boys and Girls Club. When does the rule change that you're articulating?
Well, I think that it's a situational rule, and I think just like in cases where you have search warrants in a home, where people who are completely not associated necessarily with the occupants of the home but happen to be there are stopped during a search.
What's the leading case that says you could search everyone present in the home?
The Michigan v. Summers. And in that case, in fact, they took the occupant who was out on the sidewalk, who had left the home, and required him to re-enter the home so that they could he would be present during the search. So that wasn't even a case of the police walking in with a search warrant and stopping people who were already there. They asked the occupant to come back in, having seen him leave.
But they had a search warrant?
For the home. Yes, they did.
And
for the individual.
Did the search warrant include a reference to any persons found therein?
Not to my knowledge. And in that case, that he wasn't even therein. So that would not have applied to him. And in terms, there are also cases like Ibarra, but I don't think that case has much relevance to the case at hand. In Ibarra, the patrons of the bar were searched when there was a search warrant for the bar, for the tavern and the barkeep. The patrons were not companions of the barkeep. They were people who just happened to be there, just like there were other people in the parking lot outside the Boys and Girls Club, and nobody is suggesting that they should have been subject to a stop. So the state contends, given that the totality of the circumstances, that it was a valid stop and a search. Just as this court has said in, for example, in Deputy, a deputy was found walking with Flamer and another man. They had probable cause to stop Mr. Flamer, but they had no probable cause for Mr. Deputy or the other man. They were stopped, they were frisked. After they were frisked, they were asked some questions, and deputy became evasive, and then they detained him at that point. But there was no question, nobody raised the issue about whether even the stop or the frisk was bad. It went just fine, and the court said they were properly stopped and frisked. The only factors in that case was that deputy was a companion of Flamer, who was suspected of a very violent murder. They suspected that there was more than one murderer, and they were stopped approximately 7 hours after the crime.
Well, he gave suspicious answers, didn't he?
After he was stopped and frisked. And then the issue was whether he could be detained and taken to the police station based on that. But they did not contest the stop and frisk.
Well, in Ibarra, didn't the United States Supreme Court said you had to be able to articulate some reason for suspecting the person was dangerous?
Yes, but if you look at the car cases, what would be the, and you look at Bowie and protective sweeps, you only need to articulate a reasonable suspicion that in that circumstance there may be someone who is armed. And in this case, the police had a reasonable suspicion that the man with Jones would be armed.
And you draw that conclusion from the fact that Jones was being arrested for a drug offense.
For drug trafficking on a federal warrant, which is not just a minor drug offense.
How old was that warrant, and that was for a crime that occurred where and when?
That is not in the record.
Well, is that important for purposes of determining whether on that occasion it is a reasonable probability or reasonable articulable suspicion that somebody's going to be armed? If it's 5 years old, does it matter?
Yes, I would think then. If it was very old, that would have a bearing on it, yes.
Yeah, when your response to Justice Lindsay's question was, that's not in the record, does that mean you don't know the answer to his question?
I do not know.
Where in the record would we find the testimony as to why the officer conducted this pat-down and search?
That is in the suppression hearing testimony, and he articulated that because he was an experienced police officer and he was aware that drug dealers often traveled with people who had weapons, that for safety reasons he would stop anyone who was a companion of a drug dealer. And he also said he did not know for sure who was who, and that he was not going to wait to find that out. Going to stop him first.
Did you want to save your remaining time?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, again. Firstly, I want to correct or supplement something that my opponent indicated in her articulation of the facts. She forgot to mention that the confidential informant, I'm assuming that's where they got the information, indicated that Mr. Jones, they didn't expect him to be a companion of anyone, was playing basketball. She also forgot to mention that when Mr. Henderson was approached by the officer, he put down his gym bag coming from a basketball facility. The reason that Judge Herlihy apparently, and he did consider the analysis, the Terry analysis of not citing it as Terry in the very beginning, State argued Hunter. That's what we argued about down there, the Hunter case, and the Hunter case is the automatic companion rule case. He decided that the Terry rationale wasn't even approached by the state, and he went right to the automatic companion rule. The police are required to act reasonably, and one can only wonder why when Pope said, "There they are," he didn't say, "Jones is the one in the, Jones is the tall one, Jones is the one." It takes that quickly, that much time to identify who Jones was. I have articulated the position that I take in writing, and I think I said it better in writing than I can say it in verbiage, but I am going to point out one thing, and that's the danger of abuse in this case, to give you the street that you don't live in every day, and I do with the people that I represent. I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last 5 or 6 years, we have not been burdened with nearly so many I-95 arrests as we used to have. And you will remember there was a spate of them with the Florida, New York corridor, and people being pulled over all the time. They didn't stop doing drugs. They didn't start going to Maryland. What they got is smart. And they knew when you come to Delaware, make sure you use that indicator when you change lanes, and make sure you go 55 miles an hour. Word got back. So the reason we don't have that anymore, I suggest, is not because they stay away from Delaware, they get smart. Right now, in Wilmington, we have the 300-foot rule. We have arrests every single day, and it's proper when you don't use your indicator 300 feet before you make a turn or before you change lanes. And we have the police coming in, I pulled the car over, he used his indicator 200 feet. Well, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But there is a potential for abuse. In each one of those cases, if the state has its way, everybody in that car, without there being any other circumstance, can be ordered out of that car, hand on the hood, and that old travail starts. In this particular case, it was a drug trafficking case. How about if it's crimes of violence? Offensive touching, menacing, harassment, disorderly conduct? How about when the person is pulled over and they're worn out for harassment? Police can say that's a crime of violence. These are dangerous people. I search everybody. How about a habeas? Life from what? You don't know what a habeas is for. Could be a very violent crime. What you're doing, and the police are doing this all the time, Schiavi is not a rogue cop, and when he tells you on page 19, 20, and 21 what he does all the time, he does it. They're all doing it. And they're doing it because they can get away with it. They're getting everybody out of the car, they're patting everybody down, and they're using the same rationale that's going on here, the automatic companion rule. And you can read what he says. Every time I arrest somebody, he doesn't say for crimes of violence, for drug trafficking. Every single time he makes an arrest, everybody's out, everybody's on the car, and they're getting patted down. And that's the abuse that's going on. And that's why it is necessary to put this within the traditional framework of Terry. Is there reasonable, articulable suspicion attributable to the particular individual? Pringle, which Justice Holland reaffirmed in the Lopez decision last year, Pringle says it's still the rule that you have to have particularized suspicion toward that particular individual. In this case, Henderson did nothing wrong. He did everything that was asked of him. He made eye-to-eye contact. There was no evasive contact. You know, this experienced officer, had there been any nervousness, had there been any hesitation, had there been anything to suggest criminality, he would have lit upon that and said he acted furtive, he acted suspicious. It didn't happen. He was a man coming out of a basketball facility who happened to have a choice of friends, apparently, or companions. We don't even know they're friends, but they were together, who was being totally lawful, totally compliant. He's put on the car, he's patted down, and it shouldn't have happened.
Well, tell us what you contend should have happened when the police know that one of the three of them is wanted on the warrant.
Okay, I'll give you two examples. I thought of that one. I didn't know if you were going to ask me another dumber question. Number one, is Michael Jones, any one of you Michael Jones? Number two, worst case scenario, everybody put your hands on the car. Who's Jones? If nobody answers, perhaps you go to the next step. You can secure, and this is just for safety purposes, I put myself out there if I'm a police officer. If I have somebody who I've said, state police, stop where you are, and he stops, broad daylight, safe area, I got cops all around the place, I got the car blocked in, and I want to control the situation, put your hands on the car so I can see him. And he's standing there, and he's made safe. That is the worst case scenario this situation should have gone to. Until Pope, we have him secured. Which one of these guys is Jones? Because that's simple to do. And it doesn't impede law enforcement. It doesn't expose anybody to unnecessary safety concerns. Very reasonable. And they didn't get reasonable because they do this all the time. They get away with it. Back to you.
I would just like to say that police safety is a primary concern, and the federal courts have gone more and more toward providing for officer safety and realizing that officers have to be secure in what they do. There are more and more guns on the street. There's more and more violence out there. It's a minimal intrusion to stop, check for a weapon, and move on. In terms of the lives it can save, it's minimal.
Well, how would you apply Terry to this case? You mentioned Terry, so you know the holding. Tell us how Terry would apply here.
I believe that because the knowledge of the police officer that the person he was stopping was with a known drug dealer, he was likely to have a weapon. Moreover, he did not know for sure which person it was.
And is it relevant that they were all just playing basketball?
I don't think so. As the police officer testified, the drug dealers don't necessarily stop dealing drugs just because they're at the boys' club or they're doing something. That doesn't mean they aren't, as you can see, they are still traveling with people with weapons. They are also interested in preventing their own apprehension, which is often why they travel with what can be known as bodyguards with them, in a sense, because these people live a violent lifestyle and they're always susceptible to encounters with police or other people who associate in that world who are equally violent.
There are two statements that Mr. Hurley made that I'd like you to address. The first is that the only issue argued to the trial judge was the automatic companion rule. And secondly, that there were alternatives to the pat-down and the search that would have dealt with the issue of officer safety. And the inference is, shouldn't there be a rule from this court or a rule articulated in this case that suggests that police officers should take whatever reasonable course is available, but if there's a reasonable course short of a search and seizure of an individual, they should take that other alternative?
I think that the police need to take a reasonable approach for officer safety. I absolutely concur on that. To draw a line as to, in each case, where that line of reasonableness is, I think you go back to the totality of the circumstances in terms of deciding what is reasonable. And for a police officer who has knowledge of other things and is experienced in this, we need to have some faith that he does have a sense of what is reasonable in that given situation.
Well, but who's to be the judge of what's reasonable? My question really goes to, in hindsight, in consideration of the issues that go before a court on a motion to suppress, should one of the considerations the court makes about whether the police officer either did quickly, mentally explore other alternatives and rejected all others for a good reason, or whether the totality of the circumstances suggest that there was a more reasonable or an equally reasonable alternative short of even a minimally intrusive search and seizure of an individual.
Well, I think that the courts have found that generally, as long as the search is reasonable, it doesn't have to be the most minimal possible, in because of the fast-moving situations that police can't necessarily make those split-second determinations. And
okay. Right.
I'd like to ask one final question of mine, if I may ask it, and that is it your contention that because the totality of the circumstances, in your view, were not considered, that issue was not addressed by the court, trial court, that this should be remanded so that those can be addressed? Or are you asking us to decide those in the first instance?
We would ask you to decide that given the facts of the case and the totality of the circumstances, that it was a reasonable stop.
Even though the trial judge did not address that?
If you think it should be remanded, the state would be...
Well, I mean, is it your position that he did not address that?
I don't believe he thoroughly addressed it. Because he said in the opinion that because the Delaware Supreme Court is more protective and has not adopted the automatic companion rule, I am compelled to rule this way.
Well, help me remember your answer to the Chief Justice's question. Was Hunter the primary focus of the argument?
Did argue Hunter below, but I also believe that Hunter was considered ultimately on the totality of the circumstances.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, counsel. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything before the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honor of the court.